Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
What an amazing morning. It's just good to be alive and having beautiful conversations like the one we're going to have. I'm Timothy Maurice and we're back on Unbranded. Today we are talking at the intersection of human and brand behavior. There is a potential to influence the world on a much higher level than if you don't own your influence. So we're going to talk about specifically becoming an influencer. How do you go from like a C-list or a B-lister to an A-list influencer where you get paid to tweet, you get paid to literally just be, like be, just to be. You can show up at a function, you can physically become an ambassador, you can represent things you really care about. So it's not just superficial stuff. If you want to move the world dealing with social justice issues, you can influence it that way as well. So we're going to talk about the whole world of influences. And today on the show, I have the legend, Miss Melanie Ramji. You know her as Hypress. Good morning. How are you?
That's such a big word to live up to.
No, but let's just keep it real. And we have Shay Scott Crosley, who works specifically in the area of helping people get sponsorships and connecting brands and influencers. Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. How are you, Mars?
Do you feel like a legend as well?
In my own right, absolutely. Awesome. Aren't we all legends, actually?
Yes, we are, actually. You guys have to own it, completely own it. So today we're going to move fast. We only have an hour to do this, guys, actually 50 minutes. So we're going to talk specifically about, first of all, for those who aren't aware of who you are, I mean, we get a report every month of where our listeners come from. Mm-hmm. It's the most exciting thing ever because we have people all over the world. Literally, we have a big following in South Korea, all over the world. And that's the best part because you can go onto iTunes and you can search branding and our name pops up. And anyone who has iTunes in the world can follow us. So for those who aren't aware of you, Melanie, I met you. The first time I think I met you was with Bonky at a restaurant. And we said hi to each other. I think we kind of knew of each other, but we had never met before. And you guys looked like you were having a spiritual moment. And I remember distinctly, like, I didn't want to bother you guys. It looked deep. It looked very deep.
We have those moments every time we see each other.
I guess anybody with Bonky, you're going to have a spiritual moment.
I thought I've known you all my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. There you go, spoiler.
Well, that was like 8-9 years ago. I hadn't been in South Africa that long. But it's been really fun to watch your own brand grow. As a mind in the PR marketing space, but also as an influencer. So your perspective is very valuable on the show, particularly because you work on all sides of the equation.
Dude.
From dealing with clients to being an influencer to connecting them. So
great.
Awesome. Yeah. And Shay, you and I met at Hyde Park. And,
absolutely.
And I thought you were Miss World. And I thought, no, literally, you know, because
she's hot.
Yeah. I said to you, and, but you were working alongside Penny Lebiani on a project or so. And so we connected. Penny had like 5 meetings lined up at once.
As she always does.
Yeah. Like literally. So she kind of left us there. We were stuck with each other.
Yeah,
literally.
Escape route.
Yeah, exactly. And so we started chatting about opportunities for sponsorship. And I just find what you do really interesting. And I'm glad we got a chance to unpack it more today. So let's start here. Melanie, you're an influencer. What is an influencer?
I think an influencer is an individual people, the public looks up to and they value your opinion.
Okay.
So you influence the masses.
Got it.
To like what you like.
Okay.
So brands tell you what you like sometimes.
So now we're talking a technical term, but let's go back a bit. On some level, every human being is an influencer. So,
correct.
Right? If you are a wife and you literally work at home and you're a housewife and you make sure that your home is set up for your child to thrive, you influence that home, right? Or if you're a receptionist or you're a CEO or whatever, you're like Sheryl Sandberg and you help people lean in.
Correct.
You're an influencer. But today we're talking more specifically what you're referring to, which is the technical definition, which is fundamentally the fact that you can actually shape and connect brands and so forth. On the sponsorship level, Shay, are you finding that brands literally are looking to individuals, influencers more than before?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think the trend across most of the world nowadays is experience. You don't want to just see a billboard and be like, okay, cool, you know, that I like that jacket or whatever. You know, you actually want to see your favorite rugby player, and you want to see your favorite movie star in it, you know, speaking about it, engaging, and you're making, you know, different styles of wearing the jackets and things like that, because that's how you get engagement going. You know, that's how you start telling a story. You're not really going to get movements on your brand if it's just a static board sitting in the middle of nowhere.
Let's go back throughout history and look at some of the sort of global influences. I remember Michael Jackson aligned as sort of a brand, a personal brand, alongside Pepsi back in the day. Mm. And if you look historically, this thing from like the 70s and 80s is start to sort of really sort of bubble up and materialize. Yeah. Let's look at South Africa's history. Who were some of the first brands that were really getting paid, or individuals that were able to demonstrate influence and make money from it?
The first one, I don't know about you, Manny, but the first one I can think of, literally the first one jumped to my head, was Charlize Theron and J'adore Dior. For me, that was...
It was a major
The most
deal.
Incredible association. Yeah. And, I mean, it's my favorite perfume. I don't know if that's because it's Charlize's and I'm obviously loyal to her being South African, or if it's the brand itself.
Okay.
I love Leon Schuster. He influenced me. I wanted to be a filmmaker. I wanted to go into film. I wanted to make movies and he was a great influence for me.
Okay.
Everything he did was so cool.
And, you know, thinking back to some of the legends, the South African legends, like some of the singers and so forth, who was one of the first to actually sort of sign a deal where they were aligned with a brand?
Wow. Jeez. That's a tricky one.
You're going to expose me here, so I'm going to sit this one out.
So think about mom. Let's think about Mira McKay. But did she ever get a chance to represent a brand and get paid like that?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
No.
Well, that's what's so exciting about this era, right? It's part of what's
so interesting.
So exciting is that this is one of the first. I would say we're probably halfway, sort of in the second generation of this. If you look at Brenda Fassie, I doubt she really ever.
I don't think so.
Ever. Mm-hmm. So this is like one of the first generations. If you look back, I think Zola and those guys. Remember Zola Seven did that first sort of sell CD.
I think that's
deal.
Where it started with the Lebo Mathosa generation.
Yeah, that was huge. And to think about how it's materialized now to a point where people are getting paid, paid. I mean,
insanely.
I'll tell you guys this. I helped Nontle Tema structure that one of the first legit deal back in the day, and I remember. I mean, I don't think she'll mind me sharing this because it was so early on. She didn't really have a sort of her bank accounts and stuff structured. So they had to pay me and I had to pay her. This is like, 9 years ago?
Yeah, 10.
Yeah, 9, 10 years ago. And I remember thinking that, I mean, the amount of time that she had to spend to get that cash was like nothing, like one day.
Yeah.
Like one day's worth of work and you can make over 6 figures of income. So this is a real, and back then it was really before the social media world, it really took off. Yeah. So she didn't have to tweet.
There was none of that.
Damn.
But show up for a meeting.
Right? Just show up for a photo shoot at a meeting and done. It's done. So now things are slightly more complicated. And today, as we explore this conversation of influences, there's so many levels and tiers from print, from social media, to actually showing up for live experiential campaigns and so forth. So we're going to really, really unpack it today. So if you're just tuning in, we're talking influences. Again, I'm Timothy Maurice. You can hit me up on Twitter at Timothy Maurice. And we're chatting to Hypress. And you can follow her on Twitter and all over. Are you Hypress all over all platforms?
Everywhere.
Hypress.
It's just easier that way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Consistency. And Shay, you lived in London for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you came back after 9 years, 8 months.
Yes, to be exact.
And how long ago was that?
That was 2014.
Okay.
Came back on the 11th of the 11th. That was quite significant for me.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you miss World Cup.
Yes.
Aww.
Yeah.
I so miss World Cup. But I was there for Paris 2007, so it was okay.
And so you've seen that South Africa, one of the things I'm sure you've seen that South Africa has really caught up with the rest of the world, when this influencer conversation, like I remember when I first came to South Africa, that people, I felt that brands were undermined, but I feel now that brands are starting to take individuals serious.
Yes.
Are you saying that as well?
Absolutely, definitely. Obviously, it comes with its problems though as well. You know, you as a brand itself, you're taking a risk by aligning with an influencer. because that means that anything that influencer might do wrong reflects on your brand as well. You know, so it's a really tricky game to sort of get the fine line of perfect synergy and contextual fit between the brand and the influencer.
And I think all of us pose risk, right?
Completely.
I mean,
absolutely.
Look at Lance Armstrong. Who would have ever thought?
Yeah.
No way.
Tiger Woods, all of these
Maria
big,
Sharapova
strong.
As well.
Maria is one of the bigger shocks.
Which you never would have thought.
Yeah. You would have never would have thought she would have imploded like that. When you signed your deal, were you afraid? Because you're quite vocal. Were you afraid that you were posing a risk to the brand?
I'm positively vocal.
Yeah.
Because you gotta be.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying. Like, people who are quite vocal, you know, some, even me, I say things sometimes that I look like, I'm like, whoa, did I just say that? You know, so we all do that.
Yeah, you know, I am very vocal on all social media, but I have to be aware. First and foremost, I'm a publicist, and I have to be very aware of what I'm saying. So similarly, when I'm associating with a brand, I have to be very careful. Like, is it going to, you know, screw me over for the next project?
Sure.
If I'm with the cellular network, I'm not going to be able to do work with the other two or the other three in the future. So I'm very careful. And I also don't associate with projects or brands I don't believe in. It's a difficult one, and we all have money. And but yeah.
You've turned down money.
I have.
Which
is a brand I don't believe in. Well, I'm not an A-lister yet. I'm still there, D.
Moving on.
But I'm not going to promote a product I don't use, I don't believe in, or I don't think they stand for the same values I stand for.
Got it.
So it's difficult because, you know, I've got a son. I'm a single mom. But,
You
know, what does it say if I'm promoting something I don't use, for instance, let's say a beer that everybody knows I don't drink, what does it say to my fans or my followers or my friends?
It's so funny you saying that, Mandy. Sorry to interrupt you. I'm so excited about that, actually, because literally, I won't mention the person, a celebrity who is sponsored by a very, very well-known whiskey brand. There's actually an article in a magazine of her saying, oh, she doesn't really, she's an official ambassador for this whiskey brand. And she's going on to say she doesn't really actually drink whiskey at all and she doesn't really like it and it's not her drink of choice. And I was like, oh my word, that's like complete, absolute suicide.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
And wonder what happened. Did they pull her in? Did they get rid of her? Or do you know?
I think that they parted ways on amicable terms.
I see.
To put it quite politely.
I see.
But you know what I mean? And that's an example of just going for money. Yeah. And that's why I have such respect for you, Melanie, that you're actually aligning with brands, you know that you are that you believe in and that actually fit your personal brand. Yeah. Because obviously
one of my biggest clients is actually we're not gonna mention brands, but it's a cider.
Got it.
I will never put it forward that I drink it. But I work in an 18 to 25 space and that's what I portray. I'll represent them PR wise, but you'll never see me posting a picture drinking the brand. Because it's not who I am. It's not what I represent. But I'll sell it to the market. I'm intended to sell it and advertise it. But it's such a difficult one. But it's tricky for artists who actually they don't drink alcohol, but they get approached by a whiskey brand or a vodka brand and they take the money. I don't judge them.
Yeah. It gets real interesting. In fact, I was in the Bloemfontein recently and a young guy who's just sort of like a youth minister at his church works for an alcohol brand. And we were talking about the complexity of it and how would he, if his youth ministry needed funding, would he go to this alcohol brand to set up a marquee outside of the church?
And take the money.
Take the money. You know, and can you justify because he's going to do good with that money. Right? And I think we enter in a world where there's going to be a lot of fusion between the spaces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we need to open up for that. You know, the ability to, speaking of influencing the world in a good way, the campaign you had with Jet is one of my favorite type of campaigns where you influence people's self-esteem and body issues. Take us back. You know, when they approached you, did you immediately say yes or did you have to think about it?
So I've seen similar campaigns and when they called me up, I was like, oh my God. I called my dad. He was the first person. I said, Dad, will you be comfortable seeing me in undies on in the newspaper?
But also in malls everywhere. Like you come out of
the- No, let me tell you, I didn't read the contract. So I didn't know it's going to be all up in the front of the store.
Yeah.
So call my dad up and he said, well, are they paying you? So I'm like, yeah, Dad, it's not a lot, but like, I've always wanted to do something for big girls, because I'm not a small girl, but I'm not a huge girl. Yeah, but, yeah, yeah. So it was really a motivating factor. Like, I wanted to do something cool. So I also said, who else is involved? And then they said, my friend Leanne Dlamini. And I was like, well, this girl's like a size zero. Why would she be involved in this campaign? And I actually got the campaign wrong. It was about real women, not big women. And it was such a great project to be involved in. I got to make lifelong friends. Honestly, it boosted my own confidence, because I didn't realize I was that shy and that not confident about my body. So going into the photo shoot, I got to meet other girls that were smaller than me, that had bigger confidence issues than I ever thought I had, and girls that were bigger than me who were ready to take it all off.
What I loved is that all of you had something sexy about you. Like, all of them. And it was, I think that's what I really enjoyed, is like, I think it inspires the average person when they walk in by there to go, you know, let me find my sexy. Cause all of us, like, everyone has that thing, right? And, Shay, have you seen this campaign? Are you aware of the
No, so I actually just, you know, saw the images this morning with Melanie, and I actually said, it looks like a guest sort of a campaign. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And every woman in that photo, I agree with you, looks sexy.
I mean,
every single woman, you can see she's literally wearing everything out there. You know, this is me.
So the shock of the campaign was that, I mean, I actually really didn't read the contract, because I'm like, one of my friends was involved. I said, did your husband read it? He's a lawyer. Cool. Did you sign it?
Yeah, exactly.
So we went ahead. Good. And it was really cool, because I was actually the middle ground. I was the colored girl. I was the in between the skinnies and the fatties, or the big girls and the small girls. And yeah, they blasted my face all over the front of the store.
Yeah, because you were like representing all of them.
It was a shock.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I'm like, okay, maybe Leanne's in the other store and the other girl's in the other store. And no, I was like the biggest picture.
You were the face.
And
of
my
it.
Son wow. was like, that's my mom, and he's only 4. So that made me proud.
Oh, nice.
But I think I was more proud of what the campaign represented and what it did for other girls who bumped into me in the street who said, wow.
Stopping the body shaming and the nonsense out there. Absolutely. So you guys sat down. Let's talk about structuring deals, okay? But the bottom line is, we know you can actually get paid to tweet. You can get paid to literally just wear clothes online. You can get paid to, in the real world, physically sort of, and I don't even like saying real work, because it is all real now, right? Mm. So you can get paid to sort of like show up at this interview. Did I pay you guys?
Wow. Did you?
Wow. Right? So you can get paid on so many levels. And I think it's really important for us to make this conversation very real. Okay? So you don't have to tell us numbers and so forth. They call you, they invite you to a meeting, they discuss numbers, they tell you, was it flexible? Or did they just give you a number and say, you got to go with this or we're not choosing you?
Well, Uchet, they said it's either A or B. I went with B because it was more.
Okay. And,
but choice. I'd never done anything like that before. So it was pretty new for me. We went into it. We all got the same amount.
Okay.
You were offered A or B. I don't know who would go for A.
Yeah, but shouldn't it have been C, because they use your face more?
Hey, it's controversial. But I think post the campaign, some of the girls said, you know, we should have got more. And, you know, I was so happy about what the campaign did for my personal brand. I would have done it for half the price. Even.
I see.
But it was so cool. I think if they had called me and said, this is what it's really about, and this is the exposure you would have get, I probably wouldn't have done it for free. I mean, if they said, my year's 5K, I would have been cool with that.
Got it.
Because of what it exposed me to. My followers doubled. Doubled, but I've got a lot more.
There was a boost.
Yeah.
And which shows that there's a significance in your essence and what you do and what you're about. There's a quality in your work and so forth.
Great.
And I think, Shay, one of the big things you guys look for when you look for sponsorship deals and structuring deals is quality in people, right? But let's stay focused on the structuring. When you first sit down with someone, you identify someone that you want to work with, and there's somebody out there that you think a brand would be ideally aligned to. Do you provide a couple of options? How do you begin to structure?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it depends who's approaching you. If, for example, you have a corporate coming in and saying, you know, we really want to maximize our brand awareness, we want to get some people on board, boost our own likability factor, so to speak, they will then, to be honest, more times than not, it'll be a trade exchange. So it'll be, you know, boost my car brand. You can drive the car for free, you know, as long as you tweet about us, post up a few photos, that sort of thing. Obviously, there's also the monetary side as well. But what we find more is, so we will give, the option will be trade exchange, straight change exchange.
Okay, let's break them down. Okay, yes. So one, trade exchange.
Yes.
Where you can get, like, people drive cars, for, mm-hmm. you know, they don't get paid for it. I saw recently a friend of mine was at the beach posting her car. I know she's not getting paid, but she's enjoying the car.
Absolutely. Okay. So there's that, so where it's beneficial to you. So let's say I need a car.
You call up your...
Let me align with the car brand. You know, I'm helping them, they're helping me.
Okay.
But with that comes responsibility as well. You can't just be an influencer. The main point of an influencer is to invoke action, not just build awareness. Because you can have 200,000 followers, but how many of those 200,000 are actually really going to cause leads, you know, generate leads, sure. generate sales, you sure. know, maximize. So there's the one. So there's trade exchange. Then there is monetary exchange.
Yep.
Where it is.
We like that one.
but again, I mean, you. So for example, let's say you endorse a cricketer and you sponsor his back of the bat sponsorship. So you spend 500,000 rand, I'll put out a figure, on the back of the bat sponsorship, and he has the most horrific season he's ever had. You have no exposure. I think there's no real wisdom in, you know, in putting yourself, you know, out there in that space. Or there's the other side where there is a combination of both, where you actually incentivize the influencer and say, right, we will pay you a small fee. Maybe there'll be a small trade exchange, but we will give you, we have a way of measuring directly the leads that are generated and direct sales are generated by your influence. And we will then give you commission based on those sales. That for me is the most clever route, because you're incentivizing the influencer to really have an impact.
Yeah.
And
it's almost like a JV, a joint venture.
Yes, exactly that. And in that way, the influencer is then actually really invested. And they're not just tweeting for the sake of tweeting and making noise for the sake of making noise. They actually really want to help you make sales because it's benefiting them.
Got it. Mm-hmm. And
I have a great relationship with the car brand. So mm-hmm. they don't pay me, but I get invited to the coolest stuff. And that doesn't pay bills. But yeah, when I need a car to drive down to Durban and call up my brand and say, can I have a car? I'm going to tweet to death about your brand.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it does relate to sales. So I think the reason they keep me on their books is they took me out to India on a 6-star all paid for amazing trip, and I tweeted so much that like people had actually ordered the car, 2 people, based on my tweets, and that's like huge. That's cool. 2 whole cars. I stay on their books.
Yeah, that's an additional layer. That's just sort of social favor, which is enormous. Like if you know you're going to get invited to premieres or you're going to get trips, that's not really a trade exchange. You're not getting an object or an asset back. You're physically just getting social equity, social favor. And I think those are 4 important distinctions, which is literally you got your monetary, you got your joint venture, you got your social favor, and you've got your trade exchange type of levels. And, you know, I've been involved in a number of various types where I had one brand who didn't want to commit long term, but they said, if you will do interviews for us and you'll speak about our brand in media, we'll pay you per interview. So some interviews were, for example, would be 10 minutes. Some of them would be a whole hour, but we agreed to 1 set price. So they said, how do you want to structure it? And anyone who's listening who wants to sort of get paid for this type of thing, most brands are fairly open. Have you guys found that most brands are relatively open to structuring things that work for you? Have you seen examples where you feel like the brand, the individual just kind of got raped? Like literally they went in, they were just so eager to have a deal that they got raped? And, I mean, you don't have to give people's names, but have you seen examples like this?
I think because we're pretty young in this industry of getting paid to tweet or social media or just being paid to represent a brand. I think we're still very young in the global market. We're catching up, but we're still young. So I've seen so many celebrities being raped. For instance, the Jet campaign, we got paid pretty well. I think Leanne, for instance, could have got paid double of what I got paid.
Okay.
It's campaigns like that you don't know your value. We're still learning how it all works. I'm still figuring it out. So if a brand like MTV calls me and says, can you tweet for 1,000 rand for 10 tweets? You know, I'll do it the first time, but then I say, well, you know, I've heard from a friend, they get 10,000 and we take it from there. So I think we're all still learning. So I mean, with me, we don't really have a structure, but I've figured it out over the last 5 years that I've been doing it.
Got it.
And I advise some of my friends and colleagues as well. And now I've been in a space where I actually manage those sort of things. So I know it's a standard.
Got it.
But yeah, I've seen I've seen huge mishaps.
Yeah. We're talking real world influence, how to get paid to from your influence that you work hard to develop. We're going to go to a break in a moment. We're going to come back and we're going to talk more specific examples and structuring. And we're going to give some case studies of people out there who are doing a really good job at this and who are killing it. We'll be right back.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
We're back on Unbranded talking literally how to influence the world and get paid to do it, from tweets to ambassador deals to just showing up in media to from your Instagram wearing clothes or just representing, and the levels. I mean, before we went to the break, we broke down the four levels with my guest Shay Scott Crosley and Melanie Hypress Ramji. We talked about literally getting monetary exchange, trade exchange, becoming a JV, sort of joint venture partner with the brand, and social favor, just literally getting invited to things, of being allowed to travel and engage and so forth. So there are many levels, and the brand, the world is evolving in such a wonderful space that it's just really exciting where we're headed, and that the individual, I mean, several years ago, Time Magazine made the person of the year you. The individual. And that's where we are. We live in an era where the individual is running things. So if you want to get paid, you want to run the world and do so, this is the conversation for you. Before we went to the break, we were just talking about different ways to sort of structure things and how important it is. But the reality is, if you've got two followers, not many people are going to look to engage you. So a lot of people are bumping up their followers and they're buying fake followers and they're growing. I mean, we see it all the time, guys. You follow
That's
people.
So disrespectful.
Right. Mm. You see people who get online and the next day they have no followers and then all of a sudden, boom.
10,000.
They got 10,000. So there are ways to just do it. I mean, people are advertising and so forth. And a lot of the accounts, the global accounts, they did analysis of Trump's campaign. He had over a million fake followers and so
Jeez,
forth.
What?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such a huge, huge thing for all over the world. And what happens is when you have a flurry of media, you can buy fake followers because you're going to get a lot of real followers mm-hmm. and they're woven in and you'll never really see them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you guys feel about it? I mean, Melanie, you just sort of uttered that clearly you're not happy
so
about
not
this.
I'm so not for it. I believe it will catch up with you at some point. Mm. And when they have their clean sweeps, you're out.
Yeah. So there are apps and so forth that are doing an analysis now, really exposing people. But, you know, I actually did a bit of an analysis of some of the essays, top celebs, and I found quite a few who have fake followers. Mm. And I don't necessarily think it's them doing it.
I don't think they buy it, yeah.
It's their agencies and people who are representing them that are just really sort of, and there's a lot of competition. Like if you're an it girl, for example, and you are gunning for the next big show, you want to look like you are outpacing your competition.
You're beating Bonang.
Yeah, right?
If you're trying to gun for her. I don't think anyone can beat Bonang.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you got in for the top spot and you're competing, you're Pearl Tooth and you're going in for the next big deal and you're trying to beat Bonang, it does this thing of, you know, our brand's looking for numbers. What do they look for? What is the criteria? You know, this fake follower thing. Let's take the pressure off of people and say, what are brands looking for? Are they looking for just the person with a million followers? If a person has a million, another person has 700,000, what will be the distinction and determination of who they go for?
Well, I think it's about the audience. You know, it's like I said earlier on, it's one thing to have a million followers, but how many of those are actually going to engage?
But let's say they have similar audiences. Because let's take Pearl 2C and Bonang, for example. It's very similar. I mean, if you do the analysis, there may be some difference in demographic, but it's fairly similar numbers.
Then it just literally goes on the contextual fit. You know, do you want a female? Do you want a male? Do you want a woman who's high powered in you know, in business, or do you want a woman who's, you know, on the TV all the time, on radio, you know, really flashy and out there? It depends entirely on what the brand's actually trying to communicate.
I think you did say it's similar demographic, but there is there's a big difference between a Pearl Tussi and a Bonang.
Absolutely.
With who they apply to. So if you're looking for an upmarket, higher LSM audience, you're going to choose one over the other. And then brands also love, some brands like controversy, some don't, some stay away from it. So
sure, like in this particular case, I mean, if you look, let's do an analysis alongside Bonang has on Twitter, for example, 1.56 million followers.
Wow. I think she's the highest female.
Yeah, Pearl has 606, literally almost half. Almost half. So if a brand was looking at to partner with the two of them, you know, could they could they look at other elements besides just the numbers?
Of course.
In terms of their personality and so forth. And how do they measure impact is what we're trying to get to.
Well, there's the controversy level, and then there's also the deliverables. Who's known to deliver? Who's known to be punctual?
Got it.
That sort of thing.
So you think brands are willing, you believe in your experience, brands are willing to make trade-offs and go, you know what, instead of just quantity, there's some other quality dynamics that we will interest
you know
in.
What? There was this controversy about Bonang recently, and a lot of us thought lots of brands will jump off, you know, not be associated with her. But her relationship got stronger with many brands as opposed to them, you know.
Because they win in the buzz.
They still win in the buzz.
They win in the buzz.
Well, this is it. I mean, you know, it's a tell-all saying, no publicity. Any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
So if you look at let's look at their Instagram. Bonang has 913,000 followers and Pearl has 771. So it's a bit more even there, which says something.
Can we pull up Mini?
Yeah, let's look at.
Let's look at top three.
Yeah, let's look up. Let's look at Mini because this is
right now they're killing it. The three of them.
Yeah, they are really getting paid.
They're never in the country.
Yeah, I mean, and they literally are getting paid. And I remember, I haven't really had many conversations with Mini, but I remember meeting with Bonang about 8-9 years ago. The whole idea of taking this letter B and really sort of making something of it. Mini has 961,000. Followers. What do you think makes people follow? Why would Minnie have more followers and she posts a lot less? She's only have 1,500 posts and Bonang has 2,162 posts. Why would she have more followers? What is it about her essence?
Honestly, 80% of the followers I believe people have are haters. They want to see what you're doing. They're interested to see you fail.
That's interesting.
And 20% is like actual fans that love you. But it's a weird space because people want to see you like fall. But there has to be
part of it has to be how much exposure you have to people on a daily basis. So wow, we're looking at Boiti now. Boiti has 928,000. They all sort of gunning for that same 928, 961, 913, 771.
Wow.
I mean, if you look at them, I mean, all of them, for example, are on platforms consistently. So they have TV shows, they have radio, they're constantly all over the place, and this
endorsed
is very
by
important.
Everyone.
They're endorsed by everyone. All the brands want them.
They're basically, forgive me for lack of a better word, whoring themselves out. You know,
pretty much.
I mean, to all the brands. I mean, please forgive me. Do you know what I mean? Though, I mean, I don't think they're being strategic in who they're aligning with. And for me, I mean, as wonderful as they all are in their own individual right. I would want somebody who's more niche, who's speaking to my niche market specifically. How many of those people following them are just sheep followers? When I joined Twitter, Bonang and all of them popped up that I should follow them. And I was like, well, I don't follow them. You know, I'll be honest, I don't. I'm a sports fanatic. So all of the people I follow,
your
all the big sports
line,
teams and that sort of thing, you know, so.
But this is an important point you're making because you can take two trajectories, right? Mm-hmm. You can take the quick, fast, sort of get all the endorsements that come your way and just make a lot of cash and kill it right now. And your philosophy may be life is short. Let me just make it now. Or you can take the slower trajectory where you choose wisely. And I think to every individual, it's about your life and what you can afford. Because maybe you think I've got a short lifespan because most of the it girls do have a short lifespan in their space.
In their lifetime.
But because, you know, if you look at an it girl, you got maybe 5-7 years at this thing. After that, you kind of going to fall off. So the question becomes, what do you want to be known for long term? So let's look at people who take the sort of more mature, and I don't want to say more mature, let's say the better way to take the approach that is slightly more regulated where they are very choosy on who they partner with and their brand is a bit more seen as.
I think Bonang is that person. I think we spoke earlier about Lutando that you met her 10 years ago and she was already in the industry or trying to get in. And I think what these girls need to promote, or I mean, even me as a publicist, people think it's a quick fix. I just arrived here and I'm bawling out. But Bonang was a promoter. She used to work, she used to serve Smirnoff as a welcome drink at a club or a party or a launch. And that was 10, 12 years ago. So these girls didn't take the quick fix. Bonang is a prime example. I believe she's one of the picky girls who picks the brand she works with. I don't believe she holds herself to different brands.
Yeah.
If she's the one, like a case study for me, and I think she's excellent at her brand management. There have been hiccups along the way. She fell in love. She touched a boy. These things happen.
Sure, sure.
But she's been very well. Mm. She's managed her brand very well. She's been the it girl for a few years now.
Yeah.
We've said 7 years. She's close to that.
Yeah.
Will she be around next year? So she's now progressed to a more mature audience where she's on an afternoon TV show. She's got a radio show. So she's really grown her brand tremendously.
Absolutely. And that's actually key point there, your brand. It's understanding your own brand. Completely. You as an individual, as an influencer, you have to know, you know, who you are before you can start aligning with, you know, with other brands and moving forward.
And I think she also, we're similar. Like, she chooses brands that she associates with.
Mm.
Maybe there's been one or two that she did for the money. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But it seems that she aligns herself with brands that speak to her audience.
Sure.
You know, like a Willys or a Revlon.
I mean, there is that sort of prostituting dynamic that you do have to be careful of. And I do think that all brands, you know, for example, when it comes to going from a B-lister to an A-lister, I think that at that high level, it is about quality and protecting your value and not being all over the place. But there is a fine line. And I do think a lot of it's personality driven and knowing what works for you.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk about quickly how important it is to be visible. Melanie, you do this really, really well, and you seem to know how to choose the right events and the right sort of partnerships and get people at the right sort of events and so forth. How critical is it to be seen at the right events and positioned publicly?
So very important. I don't necessarily love being out every night. It's nice and warm in my bed, but I have to remain relevant. So being seen on social media is one thing for my followers, but being seen in an industry space, I have to protect that and be very careful about what events I go to and who I associate with. Because once it's a complete networking session, but it's also, it keeps me relevant in the space.
Got it.
I'm a little older now, so I'm going to be at a turn up event getting, you know, drunk and stuff.
Sure.
But I'm going to make sure I want to associate myself with good brands. So I want to be at the Hugo Boss launch and I want to be at the D&G launch. I don't necessarily want to be at the Pick and Pay launch. But the fact is, I'm also real. So I went to a Converse launch because I do wear Converse.
And I'm
for real. So I do wear the brand. So I will attend those sort of events. And goodness comes out of that too, brand association.
And the level of integrity in terms of approaching events and people who book for events is critical. I know agencies and events planners who, if you don't show up to one event of their event,
you're off my list.
And that's very critical. I want to just touch quickly on some of the male and the men out there and the dynamics and show you how tricky this really can be. If you look at Casper, for example, on Instagram versus Trevor Noah. Now, Trevor is one of the type of people who, what I call, he posts very sort of, he's very reserved.
Yeah.
He doesn't post. I mean, imagine if he posted every time he's on a flight or every time it would exhaust
us. Boring.
Completely.
So he manages extremely well. He may go 2 weeks without posting. So what that means is that he's not going to have as many followers as his influence reflects. So a good example is Casper has 814,000 on Instagram and Trevor has 858,000. When the truth is globally, he's probably huge. 50 million people know who Trevor is, maybe even more. And so his Instagram following does not necessarily reflect. And I think he chooses this direction because he's not looking to be an influencer to get a return on brands.
Absolutely.
Where someone like Casper, for example, and AKA, that's a big part of what they do. Looking at Maps. Maps has, it looks like on Instagram, he has his fans and following is growing quick because he's, over the last year and a half, he just really sort of exploded on the influencer scene. He did a deal recently with Investec that's multidimensional that looks at sort of growing sort of wealth and all that sort of thing. And I think this is important. Again, going back to your example of what you were able to do with body shame and body issues and align with a campaign that matters to a social injustice issue. It is so important for people to realize that this is not just a superficial conversation. It's a real conversation.
Yeah.
You work, Shay, with a lot of sports stars.
Mm-hmm.
sports stars are often extremely influential because their fans are extremely loyal. They are demonstrative to such an extent. I mean, imagine it must be to get tricky out there. Do you have examples of sort of sports stars that you work with that are just really making a lot of money?
Yes. One example, I won't mention the player's name, but he basically fell off the radar on South African rugby, let's say about 2-3 years ago. But he's still consistently one of the biggest commercial earners in the rugby personality world.
Oh, wow.
And that's because he's been clever. He's aligned with the right brands from the beginning. He hasn't, you know, gone for the all-out money, flashy cars, you know, flashy houses now. He's aligned strategically, and he's in a lot of those joint ventures where he's basically invested himself and invested his own brand and amalgamated them with the other brands to grow his own, you know, his own family life. It's actually fantastic what he's built up. I have such immense respect for him.
Awesome.
Obviously, on the converse, then you do get the sports guys who, I mean, let's be honest, we're a sporting passionate nation. I'm crazy about sports, rugby especially. And these guys to me are my heroes, you know, so it's very easy to get caught up in that as a, you know, as a brand, as a rugby brand in yourself.
Sure.
You know, so it's being clever and aligning yourself right.
In the last couple of minutes, Melanie, Shay, let's talk about structuring deals and how to approach brands that you want to work with. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that I really enjoy is sitting back. I saw recently, a few years ago, what Neo did, a phenomenal deal where he wanted to tour. So he and his team put together a wonderful sort of campaign and multi-tiered campaign. And they took it to, I think, some sort of Brutal Fruit type of brand. And they said, response to this multi-tiered engagement. And I think that's the approach. Instead of waiting on brands to come to you, is to sit around with a team, conceptualize ideas, put together extraordinary value for the brand. Mm. Any sort of thoughts around beginning to put together campaigns that work, and what should influencers be thinking about?
I mean, starting right at the bottom, at the foundation level, I get sponsored by a cosmetic brand, but I want to be sampled by a different cosmetic brand. So instead of sitting around, I just approach them because my numbers speak, my influence, my reach speaks for itself. So I sent them my blog numbers, sent them, and I'm on the list. Boom. So it starts as that fundamental from a foundation level. So I don't buy bots and followers. I believe all my followers are real. I don't have an agency who bought any followers for me. So I believe my number speaks for itself. And I think because I come off as my opinion is real. I base everything I post on real life. If I'm flying business class somewhere, I'm posting it like, oh my God, I've arrived. And it, you know, I make people relate. I'm relatable. I'm real. So my numbers speak for themselves. And the brand jumped on me.
Got it.
I got invited to the biggest event, and they're trying to do some cool stuff with me. But I would believe that's a formula that could work for, you know, approaching bigger brands. So if you believe you want to associate with the brand, go for it. Put together great ideas, approach them. Your influence and your number should speak for yourself.
Shay?
I hear you on that, and I agree completely. But you also need to make sure that you're being active and relevant. You know, again, comes back to understanding your own brand. And, you know, it's like me, for example, aligning with a jewelry brand. I don't really wear jewelry, you know, but it's a beautiful brand and I want to. But I always question myself and think, what value can I really take forward? And I think it's a question that all influencers should ask, you know, because we're all led, hopefully, by integrity and morals and values. And yes, it's all about making money and building up our own futures. But we need to also think about how we are really impacting. And if it's really making a difference, especially if they're paying us.
Absolutely. I think, you know, ultimately, I think as we move forward and we start thinking about, you know, taking your influence to the next level, going from sort of a C, B to an A-list influencer, we had to consider this entire conversation, right? And your ability to drive influence to a brand, choosing the right partnerships, operating the level of integrity and so forth. Where do you see the future as we close this segment? Where do you see the future of this influencer going? Because, you know, from the app space to technology to live streaming, a lot of cool stuff is happening out there. In 30 seconds, give us where you think this space is going.
Up and beyond. I'm tired of getting paid 1,000 rand for a tweet. I want to get paid 10,000 rand a tweet, like Bong Nang. So it's all upward. I think we have, like I said earlier, we have a long way to go, but It's all up. I think we need more than an hour for this.
No, we do. We need a whole another like conversation. We'll definitely pick up this conversation. What about you, Shay?
I think, I don't know. I'm twofold. I think it could be, you know, how everyone jumps to the bandwagon. You know, we could get to a stage where everyone, you know, has figured out exactly how to do it and what to do. And then you lose the niche. You lose the novelty of it. And then it might get diluted.
Brands don't want to do it anymore.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think we also need to talk about people that are overused. It's saturated. So we use the same guy for every campaign.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's becoming tricky out there. Crazy. And I think that you're right. You know, I do think it's going upward. I think that the top sort of layer of people will find themselves continuing to grow. And there's going to be that middle who are just not focused, who are all over the place, who are not really, really sort of taking full sort of control of their influence. And it's going to get interesting. Yeah. The bottom line is we don't know. And that's what makes it exciting.
That's exactly.
And I'm really thrilled that I was able to have this conversation with you guys. You guys are doing great work.
Us.
Thanks, Hypris. Thanks, Shay. I really appreciate it. We're going to shift now to our cyber health feature where we talk responsibly about how to operate online in a very healthy manner with Rianette on cyber health.
Yay.
Awesome. Yes. Welcome. And thank you for joining me, Rianette, from SafetyNet. I am so excited today to tell you that, or ask you rather, have you ever considered all the elements that your phone has replaced? And Timothy, maybe I can ask you if you can think of a couple of things quickly, that you don't need anymore because of your smartphone.
Yeah. A physical camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't need a physical camera. I don't have to carry a GPS for running if I want to, because it handles that. It handles a lot of things.
Excellent. Well, there's a video on YouTube with 30, and I think there are more, but it's listing 30, and it was produced by BuzzFeed, the 30 things you no longer need because of a smartphone. And it's everything from flashlights, maps, calculators, compasses, newspapers, magazines. I mean, we don't even need new notepads anymore. Egg timers, mail, stopwatches, GPS systems, encyclopedias, Walkmans, Yellow Pages. I mean, the list can go on and on and on forever. But the two at the end that they mentioned bugged me a little bit. And it's boredom and conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but come on, we don't, boredom is a state of mind, and conversation is the thing that we are missing out on. It's not replacing it. Mm. It's something we really have to do and keep on doing, and not let our mobile phones take that away from us. So that speaks to the heart of SafetyNet and what we talk about. And SafetyNet is there to create responsible digital engagement behavior. And something that I really found fascinating last week, and I heard about this talk at the T-Systems InTouch Technology event last week for 2016. And Peter Galdenaerts was speaking, and then he brought up this list and many other things about the future of technology that was quite fascinating. But besides the tech guru, Aki Anastasio, there were speakers from different divisions of T-Systems who showcased their areas of expertise. And Gerts Kunby, he's the managing director at T-Systems, spoke about cloud-based technologies and why we need to seriously consider the long-term impact of these solutions and how private clouds should be noticed. And I know this is very techy stuff, but we all use the cloud at some stage.
Oh, yeah.
We save our files, our photos, our contact details, everything goes into a cloud. So maybe just start listening out for what's happening in the cloud space. It's not that far above, and we need to really note where we save all our data. So just a hint, and we'll do another show on that one day. What I personally found very interesting, though, was the Connected Drive session, which was presented by Michael Franz from the automotive section at T-Systems. Now, have you ever considered how amazing yet scary it will be to tell your car with your voice? You don't even have to punch it in, but tell your car where to go, and it takes you there.
Mm.
And bring up a speed dial to a concierge service that says, good day, how can I help you? And you say, well, I'm in another country and I would like to go to my favorite or a great Italian restaurant. And it tells you exactly where to go, the nearest one, or if you want to drive for whatever.
That's like Siri already, right?
It is. It's,
but for the car.
It's like that. There was a presenter from BMW who spoke about it, and they had the cutest ad of a dad doing, he's in the house and his son is keeping, you know, like they do. He's like, why this and dad, why this and why that? And his dad's like, so annoyed with this little boy with all his questions. And then the one, at one stage, he gets this twinkle in his eye and you see, okay, he's got an idea. And he takes his son and he puts him into the BMW. He switches on the concierge service and he's like, ask her any question you want and she will answer. I mean, the voice comes up, good day, how can I help you? So this boy can just go and fire all these questions. And I love that. But I mean, think about if your car will need a service one day. All it might need is just a software update. Mm. The other thing is, will we need to go to a dealership when we need to buy a car? No, wow. We won't. We will buy things online. The car will come to us to test drive. You know, it's going to be a very different world. Then the other presentation I thoroughly enjoyed, and which speaks directly to what SafetyNet focuses on, was on the security offerings, and specifically looking at the cyber safari. It's a program that they offer to internal teams, IT systems. And this is for teams to understand and learn about the risks and the responsibilities involved when it comes to company and personal information. And everyone enjoys a game. And when you can do it at the office, I mean, it's even more fun. But through a game, they actually teach staff members the risk of using a flash drive, the risk of leaving your laptop open when you're at a coffee shop, quickly running to the ladies' room and you tell the person next to you, just watch my laptop. Or when, this is something I spoke about long ago, but charging your phone at an airport and you plug it into a socket, you don't know if it's connected to another laptop. So these type of things they teach through the Cyber Safety Safari program, and I really loved that.
Is there an app for that?
No, it's not an app. It's a physical thing. So they get staff physically involved. They physically play the games. They get put into different teams, like the lion team, the zebra team, and then they compete for prizes. And it's really fun to see how easy it is to hack someone, how easy it is to find out someone's password, etc. But there's so much more I would love to share about that specific deity systems. I really enjoyed it, and it's great to see the innovations, and it's also scary because we can't keep up. But as always, I recommend, and I would like to ask you to please stay responsibly online, drive safely on the cyber highway, and join us on SafetyNet. It's SavetyNet on Twitter and Facebook, and let's continue this discussion because it's so awesome.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rianette, and thanks to everyone who tune in and who will download this. I don't care if you're in South Korea, you're in Singapore, you're in New York, wherever you are in the world, continue having this conversation both on SafetyNet as well as this conversation about influences. I really want to thank you guys again. Mel, Hypris, Shay, thank you guys so much again for popping in.
Thank you. Follow us, please.
Absolutely. Follow them. Hypris.
Yeah, let's start Hypris.
At Shay, your Twitter, Instagram?
It's at Shay_SC.
Got it.
And I, like I said, most of my stuff is sports-based, but
it's still worth following.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Awesome. At Hypris is easy. HYPRESS. Yes, all over, everywhere. But you said you're not doing Snapchat yet, are you?
No.
You're on it now.
I'm there.
Okay.
I'm there. I awesome. Don't do it often, but I'm there.
Yeah, you're still there. Awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Next week, we'll be back on Unbranded.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.